Imagine having a backseat driver in your mind who constantly criticizes your choices, demands perfection, and never seems satisfied with your achievements. This is the ego, our sense of I or me, and according to Mark Epstein, it's the common affliction we all share. Even those who appear wildly successful often struggle with anxiety and dissatisfaction because they don't know how to loosen the ego's grip. While our culture encourages endless self-improvement to build a stronger sense of self, Epstein reveals a paradoxical truth. True well-being comes not just from strengthening the ego, but from learning when to let it go. Both Buddhist psychology and Western psychotherapy identified the untamed ego as the limiting factor in our happiness. Neither tradition seeks to eliminate it. We need our egos to navigate daily life, but both aim to rebalance it through self-reflection. Freud empowered the observing I through free association and dream analysis, while Buddhism teaches mindfulness to help people watch their minds without believing everything they think. In deep meditation, one's usual identity temporarily falls away, leaving only mirror-like awareness, a freedom from the ego-driven state that comes as profound relief. When we learn to observe our minds with compassion rather than judgment, we discover that our most persistent problems often stem from our relationship with ourselves rather than external circumstances. This intersection between Eastern and Western approaches offers something revolutionary, a comprehensive way to work with our egos rather than being controlled by them. Many approach meditation with an achievement-oriented mindset, tracking duration, feeling defeated by physical tension, or frustrated when unable to recreate peaceful states. This is why the Buddha began his Eightfold Path with right view, encouraging realism about ourselves and the nature of things. Instead of making meditation another achievement, right view asks us to acknowledge impermanence, the truth that everything changes. The term right in the Eightfold Path isn't about correctness. The original word, sama, means realistic, complete, or balanced. It's about maintaining equilibrium rather than pursuing perfection. Right motivation teaches that we aren't bound by our neuroses. Through practice, the conscious mind can transcend subconscious conditioning. Buddhism acknowledges our habitual patterns, but shows how we can break free by recognizing them in daily life. My friend Jack's experience in India illustrates this principle. For weeks, his teacher Munindra discussed only Jack's health rather than meditation techniques. When Jack finally demanded to learn the Dharma, Munindra replied, "The Dharma means living the life fully, teaching right motivation by challenging Jack's expectations about spiritual practice." Right speech extends beyond avoiding lies and hurtful words. It encompasses our inner dialogue, which shapes our reality as profoundly as our spoken words. Many accept negative self-talk as unchangeable, misinterpreting Buddhist acceptance. Meditation shows how thoughts hijack us. An itch becomes unbearable, pain seems endless, traffic spawns catastrophic thinking. Right speech means examining these mental elaborations on simple experiences. Consider Miranda, a French literature professor who faced intense anxiety while writing in an idyllic setting. Her core issue wasn't concrete loneliness, but a barely tolerated feeling she deemed shameful. In therapy, she insisted her true nature was inherently flawed and worthless. Beckett's approach to depression exemplifies the connection between right speech and right action. Instead of trying to eliminate his darkness, he adjusted his expectations while exploring it deeply, transforming his struggles into art. Right action traditionally means avoiding harmful behaviors, but it's more than mere abstention. It's choosing conscious action over impulsive reaction. The key lies in postponing immediate gratification. Letting go in Buddhism isn't about eliminating troubling thoughts, but practicing patience. As Japanese Buddhism teaches, it's the backward step that turns your light inward, settling into yourself rather than trying to banish discomfort. Right livelihood challenges us to examine how we earn money and its role in our lives. While the Buddha warned against deceptive or exploitative work, the teaching raises deeper questions about our relationship with work, motivation, and self-worth. The Buddha noted that people are driven by 8 worldly concerns: gain and loss, pleasure and pain, praise and blame, fame and disgrace. Though rarely discussed in therapy, money remains a core measure of self-worth. Right livelihood encourages balance rather than pursuing fleeting rewards. Gloria, a successful installation artist in major museums, struggles despite her achievements. Despite prestigious recognition, she feels marginalized in a male-dominated field. Through therapy, she discovered her inner scarcity mindset was holding her back. Shifting from resentment to compassion renewed her creative energy. When Kate, an overworked architect, fought with her retired boyfriend about housekeeping, her interpretation that messiness meant he didn't care caused unnecessary suffering. The solution wasn't in changing him, but in adjusting her perspective. Right livelihood extends beyond income to question our sense of privilege. Like the Buddha's arrows turning to flowers, true power comes from transcending ego, transforming ourselves and those around us without force. The Buddha used a lute analogy to teach right effort. When disciple Sona struggled with meditation, Buddha explained that, like lute strings that sound best when properly tensioned, spiritual energy requires balance, neither too forceful nor too lax. This principle applies to therapy, where balanced attention creates a holding environment that allows patients to reach unexpected insights. Right effort helps manage overwhelming emotions in daily life. My friend Sam demonstrated this when facing opposition to his studio construction. Though naturally combative, he followed his lawyer's advice to remain silent and humble in court, despite his strong urge to argue. His wife literally restrained him by gripping his arm. "It was the hardest thing I've ever done," Sam admitted, "but it worked." In our achievement-driven society, we often equate more effort with better results. Yet spiritual growth sometimes requires less striving, creating space for deeper emergence. As my Swiss meditation teacher said when I struggled to find my breath, "Don't chase her, let her find you." After 40 years of practice, I'm neither cured nor enlightened. People still note my coldness and irritability, but I have tools to face life's challenges. While my personality persists, I'm no longer imprisoned by my ego. Buddhism teaches the mind to observe dispassionately, accessing the same mental resources that effective psychotherapy taps. The Eightfold Path addresses the ego's challenges. Right view faces reality directly. Right motivation breaks habitual patterns. Right speech monitors inner dialogue. Right action responds skillfully. Right livelihood applies ethics to work and relationships. Right effort maintains balance. Right mindfulness cultivates present awareness. And right concentration develops sustained attention. In an insecure world of constant change, we can become our own refuge by learning to dance with our ego rather than being trapped by it. Freedom comes through embracing who we are, with all its contradictions, while recognizing that even our persistent problems are as impermanent as ocean waves.